Agency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, always on the first Friday. Hard to believe it's June already. Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find him online at columbusconstructiontrades.org. Dorsey, welcome back to America's Workforce.
Good afternoon, Flash. I hope everybody in Cleveland is doing well. Excited about the Tribe, I'm sure, and also the NBA Finals with the Cavs, so it's a pretty nice time to be a Clevelander, huh?
It's all good stuff, all good stuff. And then we have a boatload of people coming here in July with the RNC. You know, the last estimate on that is up to 75,000.
And
they figure about 15,000 just for media. In fact, I had heard, you know, are you familiar with the Renaissance Hotel right on Public Square?
Absolutely. Yep. I stayed there a couple times. It's a great place.
Really nice place. Not a union facility, but nonetheless, they do a good job. There's a couple of union facilities. They just opened the Hilton. I know they're trying to organize that. All the mm-hmm. hotels, of course, are booked between here, Akron, Canton, all the way out to Sandusky, and then all the way out to Lake County. I think if there's a hotel in Ashtabula, they probably book that one as well. But CBS News has taken the entire Renaissance Hotel. How about that?
Wow, what a place.
Isn't that crazy?
That'll be their personal dorm for that week. Huh?
Yeah, that's it. Good location for it, too. I know they secured that as soon as they announced that Cleveland was going to get it. Well, anyway, you've been rubbing elbows with some types here. Talk to me about this leadership breakfast, which happened, just a day or two ago. And I guess our Browns owner was there as well, Jimmy Haslam?
Yeah, on Wednesday morning, Columbus 2020 Leadership, which is a group here, business owners, small businesses, government people, and also, you know, there's labor leaders that belong, different unions and union groups, and it's been a great way for me to go and network and meet with people. Well, they have events all the time, and they had a leadership breakfast Wednesday morning, and the guest speakers were Jimmy and Dee Haslam. So, of course, Jimmy talked a lot about the family business and Pilot, about his brother, you know, being governor of Tennessee. Something I didn't know, he talked about Senator Corker was one of his roommates when he was in college, and he talked about their relationship. And then, of course, he had to talk about the Browns. There was a lot of Browns fans in the audience, me being a huge Browns fan. You know, we've talked about that on the air. Lose or lose, I'm a Browns fan, you know. Mm-hmm. So John O'Grady, Commissioner John O'Grady, who's a huge Browns fan, was there too. And afterwards, I didn't get the opportunity to speak to Jimmy or introduce myself to Jimmy Haslam. I wish I would have. There's a lot of people around. I couldn't hang around. But I did get to talk to a lot of the people in the front office, the business part, not necessarily the player personnel part, but the front office business part that he had brought down with them. And I walked up to them. I introduced myself. I shook all their hands. And I said, hey, I said, I owe you guys a big thanks. I said, thank you so much for giving me 3 days of peace and quiet every year. And they just kind of look at me a little puzzled, and there was a brief pause, and then finally one of the guys chimed in. He's like, oh, yeah, we went 3-13 last year, our three wins, right? And I said, no. I said, every spring when my Brown season ticket renewal comes in the mail, I said, I don't hesitate. I cut my check and I mail it right back. And for about 3 days, my wife just looks at me and shakes her head and refuses to talk to me. So every year, thanks to you guys, I get 3 days of peace and quiet. And I want to thank you for that. So
I never thought that there would be a positive thing out of our dismal record, but I guess for you, that's working out okay.
You got to find the silver lining in every cloud, no matter how many clouds there are.
That's
right?
Funny. Well, you are a true diehard fan. And that's, you know, that's a real fan. You know, when you have those down seasons, and we've had many, but you're still sticking in there. You're supporting the team. You're supporting that, you know, you're part of that. The money that you're putting in is going into the Cleveland coffers. So we do appreciate that here in Northeastern Ohio.
Exactly. It's a good thing. And I think the team, and they talked a little bit about the draft and some things like that. And obviously they asked my opinion, which, you know, but I think the draft was well. I think they stockpiled a lot of receivers, a lot of good picks, and they're trying to rebuild the roster. And I think the owner, it's taken 3.5 years. I think he's owned the team 3.5 years now, and you learn as you go, just like in any business. And I think he's assembled a pretty good front office, and I think you're going to see some changes. It might not appear this year right away in the record. They got a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, the division is tough. Everybody out of the division is going to be tough as well. So you might not see it in the record, but I think the product on the field is going to be better, and I think they're going to get better.
Yeah, I like the coach that they picked too. So we'll see.
Oh, I love it. I love Hugh Jackson. I think he's going to do a great job. So, yep, we'll see. You're right. We'll see.
Yeah, he did well in Cincinnati, and he also did well in Oakland. So hopefully he'll do well here. Time will tell. All right, let's move on to the Columbus Ward City proposal. I guess this is going to happen August 2nd. Talk to me about this.
Couple of issues with the Ward proposal. Columbus, the city of Columbus, is an at-large city council. We have 7 at-large city council members. There's a Ward proposal that's going to be voted on August 2nd. It's really not a Ward proposal. It's more of a district proposal where they're going to take several wards, jam them into a district, and there's going to be 3 at-large, and I think it's going to be 10 district representatives. And the language is very poorly written. It's a bad proposal. And in anything like this, a ballot initiative, the language really matters. And like I said, this proposal is not well conceived. It actually reduces representation for all voters. To me, this looks like a voter suppression issue. Currently, the residents of the city of Columbus, they get to vote on every member of council, so 100% input. This proposal would give the voter impact less than 33% because only 4 of the 13 would be at-large council members, with the other 9, like I said, representing districts. And, you know, only in this political climate would one even considering doubling the size of government. And I was the opportunity to see the city council meeting when this was read and then you know, voted on. They have to put it up on the ballot because they got the required signatures. And one of the people that is on this group to get this pushed is a Republican here in the city. Her name is Whitney Smith, and I've reached out to her to try to get her input of why she's done this, and I haven't been able to connect with her. But Councilman Stenziano had one of the great questions. He said to her, he said, you know, your party and your presidential candidate is campaigning on reducing the size of government. And here you're wanting to double the size of local government. What would your presidential candidate say about you doing this? And she said, well, he's not my candidate, which I didn't understand. I didn't understand what that said. The other problem, there's several problems with this. We could do probably a whole day on this. But some of the other issues, and I see this all the time, when I'm out with council members Klein, Stenziano, Shannon Harden or Liz Brown, it amazes me how, if we're just getting a cup of coffee or if we're getting a sandwich at lunch or even having breakfast, it amazes me how many people walk up to them and say, hey, my trash didn't get picked up. There's a pothole in front of my house that hasn't been repaired. Snow's not getting removed. And they take their name, their number, their address, and they make sure that they contact somebody to try to expedite that to get it taken care of, because that's what city government does, and that's what city services is all about. It's about trash, snow removal, and potholes. It really is. So if they go to a ward-style system, my fear is going to be this. I have a friend of mine that is a city council person in a rural town here in Ohio, and for whatever reason, he's not very popular with his other city council people. So if a small business comes to him or a constituent, maybe a pothole or a broken sidewalk or the road needs repaired, and it's costing them business, they'll go to him and say, hey, I need this taken care of. He goes to his city council, and they're all like, hey, we don't care about your ward. You know, we don't like you. Go pound sand. And it doesn't get taken care of. So I just think it pits a lot of communities, a lot of neighborhoods, a lot of districts, a lot of wards against each other. It's just a bad proposal, and, you know, hopefully this goes down to defeat. The unfortunate thing is we have a lot of important county races and also, you know, state house races that are on the ballot here in Franklin County and City of Columbus in November. So this is going to take away a lot of time, a lot of manpower, a lot of resources to work on this proposal 2 months before our general election in November. It's just a bad thing. It's a very bad thing. I think another issue with the ward proposal is there's no clear lines how they're going to draw them. So what if they gerrymander the city like the state has been done? You know, it could diminish minority participation.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have representation in the city. We have 4 men, 3 women, and 4 of the 7 are African-American. What would happen if they gerrymander the districts and we have, you know, 1 African-American or, you know, only 1 woman or, you know, 6 women and 1 man? I just don't think that it's a good thing. So we'll see what happens. I'll keep you updated. It's going to be a quick turnaround. I mean, it's already June and they're going to be voting on this August 2nd. So what is that, about 9 weeks? But we'll see what happens.
What is the editorial opinion on this right now? What are they saying?
The editorial opinion, to me, is I don't think the Dispatch has chimed in yet. I think there's some people in some of the neighborhoods that feel like that they're not represented, so that might be driving in a little bit. I think a lot of this is being driven by partisan and special interest, where Republicans feel like they're being shut out and they don't have the opportunity to participate in city government. I disagree with that totally. I don't know if the ward system or district system would help that. It's the same thing. I think they just have to have better candidates. I mean, they haven't really had a lot of good Republican candidates in the last 5 or 10 years run for city council. They've had some people with some name identification. Last year, Demetrius Stanley, a former Ohio State football player, ran, but he wasn't really a hard worker. He didn't raise a lot of money. He didn't get out and attend a lot of events. I don't think he was a good candidate. So I think that business, because Columbus, there's a lot of economic development going on. There's a lot of growth. There's a lot of building. There's a lot of population growth. And there's a lot of young people that want to move to this city because of the opportunities, the jobs, and everything. The metro parks, our metro park system is one of the finest in the country. So I don't think anybody wants to see any of that change or anything happen that could stop business working together with the politicians, the local government, or even labor working with business and local government, which is a good relationship that I think that we're starting to have and starting to build on. So I would hope that people would see that we have a good thing going here, and they wouldn't kind of upset the apple cart, I guess. And if there is true district representation that somebody wants to address, then I think that they should bring it to city council. Maybe a subcommittee should be formed, and they should, you know, do it in a smart way and look at ways that they can do, to try to do that. Like I said, I'm 100% against wards and districts, but if that's the consensus, if that's the direction that the people want to go, let's look at doing it in a smart way. And this ballot initiative does not do it in a smart way. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing at all.
Yeah, I come from the school, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know? It sounds like things are going in the right direction there, you know?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Unemployment's low. People are working. Wages are starting to creep up now as more people are going to work, which is a good thing for everybody. Businesses are starting to grow and expand, and you know, companies are starting to locate. We've talked about it in the past on your show. You know, Amazon's building here in Central Ohio. There's a lot of projects that are coming to Columbus and Central Ohio. A lot of it has to do with Columbus 2020. A lot of it has to do with the city. A lot of it has to do with the political climate. People want to go somewhere where they're going to be treated fair by government. And I think everybody in government, city and county level, are doing a good job here to keep Columbus and Franklin County growing and prospering.
You know, this may be off subject a little bit. You mentioned Amazon. Are they building one of those distribution centers down there?
Yes, they are. They've got, I think, 2 distribution centers, a slew of data centers and office buildings. I think it's about 3 sites. I think it's around 16 total projects at about $1.6 billion.
Yeah. Now, they did the same thing in Twinsburg at the old Chrysler stamping plant here. I was talking about this on the show last week, and they got some tax breaks for it. And I have to scratch my head because if you think of, and you look at, nothing lasts forever. You take a look at those auto worker jobs. Those were good family-sustaining jobs. And now the workers at Amazon, it's pretty much a sweatshop. And here's a company that is very, very profitable. They're going to build a distribution center anyway. I guess they're good to have in Ohio and all that. But you follow where I'm going with this conversation?
I do understand. We have the same thing here in Columbus and Central Ohio, where not only everything we've talked about, the political climate, but also 70-71 geographically, we're situated in a great place. I don't think you have to do a lot of tax abatements or TIFs or public financing or public infrastructure work to get businesses to locate or relocate or grow and expand here. I think they're going to do it on their own, and I think sometimes we don't investigate that wisely enough. And you're right about Amazon. I've seen stories on 60 Minutes. I've seen things on different websites. I've read different articles. You're right. It's not a good situation for the money that they make, the goods that they move, that they don't pass along some of the wages to the people that do the actual work for them.
Yeah, we had Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First on the show last week, and he hit it right on the head. I mean, they're going to build these distribution centers anyway, so we're essentially giving them money for something they're already going to do.
Absolutely.
Think about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, you know, you bring up TIFs, tax increment financing. Let's get into that. Also, raising the minimum wage, prevailing wage. It's all happening on America's Workforce. Dorsey Hager of the Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Also, Mother Jones Magazine coming up, all on America's Workforce. We'll be right back.
If it impacts the livelihood of Ohio's labor trades, you'll find it in the Labor Citizen. America's oldest labor newspaper still provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter most to Ohio's union construction industry. Each edition includes information many unions use to send out in a monthly newsletter, along with an interesting mix of feature stories and news. The Labor Citizen is a growing force for Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to the active members and retirees from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find this level of coverage anywhere else. But the only way to have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trade union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. All right, talk to me about some labor issues in Central Ohio. Number one, and this is a nationwide movement, to bring up the hourly minimum wage. It's hard to believe here. It's 2016. And we're still paying workers on the minimum $7.25 an hour in Ohio, a little higher because of what voters did. 10 years, can you believe it was 10 years ago that we did that proposal? It was in 2006 that we indexed it to inflation. So we're better than the national average, but we got a way to go. So what's going down in the Columbus area?
Better than the national average, but still nowhere near good enough. And Columbus, there's three issues that we're working on that are labor issues that people in the labor community have came to me and asked me to work on, and also members of city council have came to me and asked my input, Liz Brown, Mike Stenziano, and council president Zach Klein. So we had a meeting. I brought in Rob Dorns from ACT Ohio, who's very well-knowledged on all these issues. And the three issues we decided to discuss and hopefully tackle here in the immediate future is the $15 an hour minimum wage, wage theft, and then prevailing wage on developmental projects that receive tax abatements or tax increment financing, which is TIF. So the first one I'd like to talk about is a $15 an hour minimum wage. A lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of city workers, a lot of people employed by the city of Columbus. There's clerks, there's seasonal employees, there's employees of contractors and subcontractors that are making below $15 an hour. So if Columbus is going to be a progressive city, if Columbus is going to be a place where people want to grow, come and grow and raise a family and have that opportunity, we've got to help the people at the bottom of the wage scale. We've got to bring them up into the middle class, or at least try to bring them up into the middle class where they can survive, they can make a good living, and they can afford to send their kids on, you know, to college and stuff. This $15 an hour minimum wage, I think it would be huge. I think it would help, like I said, not only the city workers who make below $15 an hour. There's a lot of clerks that work in the judicial system that make below $15 an hour. And if you think about it, people look and they say $15, how do you come up with that? $15 an hour is $30,000 a year. I couldn't imagine trying to raise a family on $30,000 a year.
Hard to do.
So that hard to do, almost impossible. So, and then one of the people in our group in our meeting said, well, you know, like I said, they said, what do we do about seasonal employees, lifeguards and stuff like that? And I said, well, think about it. I said, there's always a high demand for lifeguards and quality skilled lifeguards, you know, in our Columbus City pools. I said, you know, you won't have to fight with Dublin and some of the other suburban schools, the city of Hilliard, places like that, for good quality lifeguards. They'll want to come here and they'll want to work because of that $15 an hour minimum wage, which I think will be a great thing.
Great idea. And here's one of the problems, and we talked about this on the show, Dorsey, is the perception of people on minimum wage. You know, you talk to a lot of folks, and they say, well, that's just, you know, teenagers get that, or part-timers, or somebody living with their parents. It's crazy because they've done some statistics on it. The average age of somebody working minimum wage is 36 years old. 36.
Yeah, exactly.
And 56% are women. And how about this? 28% have children. And as you indicated, at $15 an hour, that'll get you $30,000. How the heck can you raise a kid on $7, $8 an hour today? It's just not going to happen.
No. And $8 an hour is $16,000 a year with a dependent. That puts you below the poverty level.
Right. And then you're on public assistance. So there's your corporate welfare, you know.
Well, Absolutely. The other issue we've brought up is wage theft. And basically wage theft, Cincinnati is kind of, here we go, this is surprising, and I'm not just saying this because we're on a Cleveland station, but Cleveland is obviously by far and away one of the most progressive and forward-thinking cities in the state of Ohio. Cincinnati, I think we all could agree, would be one of the most pro-business, one of the most conservative, maybe even, you know, right-wing cities that there is in the state of Ohio.
Sure.
And here the city of Cincinnati, under Mayor Cranley and also City Councilman P.G. Sittenfield, they've introduced and passed a wage theft ordinance that enforces and prevents companies, including contractors and subcontractors, from misclassifying employees, failing to pay required wages, fringes, or overtime, and failing to pay city, state, and federal taxes. So if you think about that, if you and I are paying city taxes in the city that we live in or the city we work in, and our city is using our money to hire unscrupulous contractors or companies who don't even want to abide by the same rules and laws as the public does, you know, paying the proper taxes, paying the proper wages, misclassification of employees or workers or citizens, they should not be rewarded with city contracts or with work with the city. And that's what this wage theft ordinance does that P.G. Sittenfield and Mayor Cranley have put in place in the city of Cincinnati, and we would like to duplicate that here in Columbus, where if a company is caught misclassifying or not paying the correct wages or fringes or not paying taxes, you know, there's a process to where, you know, they're taken care of, they're fined, they have to make, make the proper back payments and stuff, and then, you know, that could even lead to disbarment because they should not be doing work with the city of Columbus.
No, not at all. Now, is that implemented in Cincinnati already?
I think that they have voted it on, and I think that they're looking at a few other issues before it's fully implemented, but I know that I'm almost for sure it's been voted on, it's been passed.
Okay, yeah, I think it's been passed. I just wonder if sometimes implementation takes a little longer, but
Cincinnati, I think that's where they're at right now.
Your point is well taken, though. If Cincinnati, a conservative area, and you have to understand, the lawmaker that introduced right to work is from Cincinnati, so this is the kind of climate you have to deal with down there. But if they can do it, obviously Columbus can do it, and any other city can do it. So it makes sense. But there is a move afoot in the city of Columbus to do the same thing.
That's what we're trying to do. Like I said, we're working with the city council. We're trying to educate all of them. I've got a meeting later today with Columbus City Councilman Mitch Brown. I'm going to bring him up on some of these issues, bring him up to speed. We've met with people in the mayor's office, Mayor Ginther, and, you know, we want to educate him on these things, and that's what we're going to do. But like I said, hopefully if Columbus is a progressive city and if we want to see the city continue to grow and develop, it can't just be the business leaders, the businesses, and the company. You know, you have to grow economic development from within and from the bottom up, too. And I think with what the mayor wants to do, with apprenticeship training, with pathways to the middle class, with rebuilding neighborhoods, I think a lot of this will take off, and I think will help that turnaround. And that leads into the last thing that we're talking on, which is the paying of prevailing wage on development projects that are either tax abated or tax increment financing. You know, I think it was about 10 years ago that the Ohio Supreme Court had that crappy decision that ruled that tax abatements and TIFs don't trigger prevailing wage. Well, if you think about it, they're getting, like you said with the Amazon, they're getting a subsidy or they're getting a tax benefit or they're getting a break, which is money, you know, to build or develop there. They should, you know, be a good corporate citizen, and they should pay the people that are doing the work on those projects a fair wage.
Right.
You know, TIFs and tax abatements provide significant taxpayer assistance to construction projects. However, these economic development tools don't trigger any kind of wage or benefit protections, you know, because of the Supreme Court. And, you know, it's just a bad thing. Large-scale development projects here in Columbus, Franklin County, and Central Ohio receive TIFs and tax abatements, and they have an effect of driving down wages in our industry, the construction industry. And any construction project will impact the going rate for that department, for that market, determining a construction worker's value. So large-scale projects that receive TIFs, tax abatements, the developer pays its construction workforce far less than the prevailing wage. Taxpayers are helping subsidize that lowering of wages in the construction industry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a good thing.
You bring up Amazon. I mean, what does Amazon want to do? They want you to buy their products. If you're not making the money, how are you supposed to do that?
Absolutely. We're spreading the money around to the people that need it, the people in the lower middle class and the people in the middle class, so that way they can buy these products. You know, that's what we're doing.
You know, I got to
exactly what we're doing.
Got to revisit that Ohio Supreme Court decision. You indicated that was about a decade ago where they basically came out, and I don't understand the logic in that, but there's a lot of cases I don't understand the logic. But they basically said when public financing is involved, you don't have to pay the prevailing wage on that project. That's what their decision said?
Yes.
Wow.
And I know. And the requirement of paying the prevailing wage, you know, one of the biggest things we're having now in Columbus, and I'm sure you're having it in Cleveland with all the work that's going on, is customers, owners, representatives, government entities want contractor competition to keep the budget, to keep these projects within budget. If you require paying prevailing wage on these projects, the worker benefits and the customer or the city or the county benefits as well, because it's going to increase competition, because more contractors are going to be want to bid these projects, because it's a level playing field.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's
a level playing field.
Here's what kills me too, when you talk about prevailing wage and Davis-Bacon and all these are pretty much conservative ideas that came out, my gosh, 50, 60, 70 years ago. When we were rebuilding after World War II, I mean, there was a lot of shoddy construction going on, and that's the reason we have these today. It's hard, Dorsey, it's hard to believe that we're still having a debate on this issue, you know?
I can't believe it either. I can't believe it either. You know, like I've been talking about, the requiring of paying these fair market wages, this prevailing wage, the wage that prevails in the city and in the county, will stimulate the local economy, put more money in small businesses, and the increased wages paid to local construction workers, it'll just have a ripple effect through the whole city and through the whole county. And one of the fears, and I understand this fear, I don't agree with it, but I understand it. One of the fears is that businesses or developers, because they have to pay the prevailing wage, will stop developing projects in the city of Columbus. That's absolutely no way.
Yeah, that's hogwash.
The 16th largest city in the country and the largest city in the state of Ohio, with all the growth that's going on, the Schottensteins are looking at building a 26-story high-rise millennial tower. Whether they pay below market wages or whether they pay the prevailing wage, they ain't building that tower in London or West Jeff or Circleville or Newark.
Right.
They're building that in downtown Columbus. People are not going to want to buy a condo in a high-rise tower, you know, overlooking a cornfield. They're going to want to have a view of downtown Columbus. That's the selling point. No wages that are required to pay on that are going to cause that project to go anywhere else. Just like here, we've talked about our office across from Grandview Yard, and Nationwide Insurance is developing the Grandview Yard. One of our city council members a couple of years ago was going around giving speeches saying that, you know, this is great for the city. This is great for the economy. Look at all the well-paying construction jobs that we're creating. And I said, you've got to quit saying that. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, you don't know that. And he goes, what do you mean I don't know that? I said, you don't know what kind of wages the contractors, the general contractors or the subcontractors are paying on those projects. You have no way to know what kind of wages they're paying. You have nothing that makes them pay a prevailing wage or a fair wage. You have no way of checking. I said, heck, I said, if we can make them pay prevailing wage on these tax or TIF projects, not only can you make sure that people are making a fair living wage, you can make sure that employees aren't being misclassified. You can make sure they're not being 1099'd or being labeled as subcontractors. You can make sure that the contractor's paying correct workers' comp, the city tax, the local tax. That's one of the things that I said to our city auditor. You know, think of all the lost tax revenue here in the city of Columbus. At any given day, and this is a conservative number, any given day, I would say there's at least 10,000 construction workers in the city of Columbus, at least. If some of them are not paying city taxes, you know, that adds up pretty quick. And we talked about apprenticeship and giving kids in Columbus City Schools the opportunity to get into apprenticeship and get into these programs to where they can top out, become a journeyman, make 50, 60, 70,000 a year, plus a nice benefit package. A lot of these projects would be able to do that. If you had a 500 worker high rise where there was 500 construction workers and they're not paying prevailing wage, they're not required to use apprentices either. If you have it where they're paying prevailing wage, even the open shop merit companies, that will spur them to have an apprenticeship program to where they can use apprentices. So, boom, if you have 10,000 construction workers in the city, easily 3,000 of those, if not more or a little less, could be on those projects every day, learning from a journeyman, taking classes, learning the trade, and be on their way to the path of the middle class.
Yeah. The bottom
that's
line
the
here.
Selling point. I think that's what we got to get across to the city, to the city council, and to the administration, and to anybody in the business community that may look to speak out against this.
Dorsey, we talk about this all the time. The bottom line is educating the members of Congress that we elect. And sometimes there's people in there that get to those positions that should not be in those. Let me pick up on that again. In 3, 2, 1. Bottom line, Dorsey, we have to do a better job when it comes to educating members on our elected officials. There's some folks that get it, granted, but there's a lot of folks, as you well know, that don't understand what the trades do. That's why you take them to those apprenticeship programs and educate them. We just have to continually do that day in and day out until we get the things done right, don't you think?
That's exactly it. We got to continue to educate everybody. Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, both sides of the aisle, all the way down from the lowest level we've talked about, township trustee, all the way up, city council, county commissioners, mayors, state reps, state senators, all the way to the governor.
All the way.
Continue to educate them all.
Every day you have to be on them. All right, Dorsey, great job as usual. You keep up the fight down in Central Ohio. The website, columbusconstructiontrades.org. Go Browns, go Cavs, go Tribe. I guess I have to say go Reds, too, because you're close to Cincinnati down there.
don't even talk about the Reds. One last thing, and I hate to end the interview on a down note. They're playing at less than a 333 clip, so if they continue on this pace, which I would not expect them to do any better, we're looking at 55-107, 107 losses.
That's pretty brutal.
That's a lot of losses.
Oh, boy, you're not kidding. They're not kidding. So, okay, brother,
exactly.
You hang in there. We'll talk to you in a month, all right?
All right. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend, Flash. Fun as always.
Very good. Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. All right, we're going to take a quick